Welcome, everyone, to episode 95. Those of you who are along early are hearing Paula's talking about vaccinations and vaccines, and she wants to finish that right quick before we get into today's episode. Go ahead, Paula.
So I apologize. Yeah, my clock must be a little bit slow, but anyway, so those of you who did not dial in early to the Insiders, and all you have to do is dial in or join us on the Coffee with the Coder Insiders page on Facebook, and we'll connect you to get in. Typically, you know, you get this extra little training, and it can be on any kind of subject. So we had talked about the vaccines, and now we're talking about the fact that the actual vaccine or toxoid is reported with 90476, and that's CPT code 90476 through 90756. Again, there's a few details that you need to know, like, you know, was there a single vaccine versus a combination of vaccines or toxoids, the patient's age, which we also needed for the administration code, and the type of route of administration, which is also needed for the administration code. Now, in some cases, the administration is, you know, if the patient is a Medicare patient, you're reporting a G code, such as G0008 for influenza vaccine or G0009 for administration of pneumococcal vaccine. But for your non-Medicare patients, you're going to use those CPT codes that we discussed, 90460 through 90474, so the admin code, and then also report the code for the substance. Make sure you check with those third-party payers for specific reporting guidelines. And then also you can report a significant, separately identifiable E&M code if one is documented. And those terms should make sense to those of you who are doing CPT coding, because that is exactly the definition of modifier 25. Which would be used on the E&M code itself, not on the vaccine. So, okay, Pam, I'm going to turn it back over to you, and we can start with the questions.
Thank you. All righty. So I'm very excited to get started on this. Before I do, I want to welcome the new members of our audience. Thank you for joining us. We welcome your questions. You can visit us at aq-iq.com, and under the Ask drop-down, there's a place for Coffee with the Coder. Currently, all the previous episodes live there. There's a really good chance that some of them are going away. but that's where you can find them for right now. And also at the bottom of the page, here's where you put your questions so you can participate with us as well. If you're not getting notifications, you can reach out to us. There's instructions on the page. We'll be happy to text you in the 1 hour prior to the beginning. And we're just ready to get started. Today we have questions from a variety of places. And somebody is going to win a specially crafted commissioned mug. I call it a coffee mug, but I think Christine calls it a tea mug. So it's whatever you'd like to drink out of it mug. And it's specially branded for us. And you get it for absolutely free by asking a non-anonymous question. We do also appreciate anonymous questions. And you can say that when you send it in, if you'd prefer to be anonymous. Once in a while, the entire setup of questions is all anonymous, and in that case, whoever dials in that day is in the running. So anyway, we have some anonymous questions today, and I'm going to start with one from Barbara from an inpatient rehab. It's a little bit involved, and I love involved questions, absolutely. So here's what she says. This question is in regard to active versus subsequent care treatment for a condition reported as a comorbidity, field 24 on the IRFPI. What is the appropriate seventh character assignment? This is not a question on etiology coding. So, for example, the patient had an infected internal left hip prosthesis. 1, 2, 3, okay. 1, the patient is on IV antibiotic during the inpatient rehab stay. Is it appropriate to code the seventh character of A for continued active treatment with IV antibiotic of the infected hip prosthesis in the IRF setting? 2, patient has an infected internal left hip prosthesis. The patient completed IV antibiotic in the STACH.
Short-term acute care.
I'm like, I don't know what that word means. Thank you. But continues on oral antibiotic during the inpatient rehab stay. Is it appropriate to code seventh character A for active treatment for oral antibiotics during the inpatient stay? And 3, the patient admits to the IRF with a dehisced surgical wound, disruption of external operation surgical wound, is currently on wound vac. It is my understanding that a wound vac is active treatment. Is it appropriate to code the dehisced surgical wound with a seventh character of A for active treatment rather than the subsequent care seventh character code of D for the inpatient rehab? And also for question number 3, for a dehisced surgical wound in which the wound vac has been discontinued, but the patient continues to have wound care dressing, which is like dressing changes, antibiotic ointments, et cetera, to treat this wound. Wound care orders are present in the chart. Documentation from a wound nurse or other care provider documents care to the wound. Would this dehiscence disruption of the wound continue to be coded with an A for active treatment? At what time during the care of the wound would the seventh character be changed to D for subsequent care? And if you have examples, I'd very much appreciate them. If recommendations are to use D for subsequent instead of A for active in the acute setting, would you please be able to provide written documentation by CMS or other resource which states to use the seventh character of D in the ERP setting? The determination of seventh character has been an ongoing topic of discussion for years, but nobody actually has a copy of the guidance that supports the selection in the ERP setting.
Okay.
Paula, this question is right
wow.
up your alley.
Yeah. This is, I'm going to tell you guys, I love this question. Barbara, thank you for asking this question. I mean, I love all the questions, but this is one that absolutely, she's correct. There's been a lot of discussion with it. So just for others on the line, I got to give you a little bit of history. The etiologic diagnosis, when you're talking about coding for an ERF on the ERF pie, the etiologic diagnosis most often gets reported with an A, but you'll have to look at the sequences of admission that brought the patient to the ERF. If it's a new injury where treatment is continuing in the ERF, typically it ends in A, unless it needs a B or a C for like those open fractures. Now, this is stated in the 2015 final rule, and it's coded this way. This, I'm talking about etio. This is not what her question was, so I'm just getting everybody up to speed here. For the etiologic, and also the etiologic can be resolved, guys, so it follows a different set of rules than those comorbidities on the ERF pie. So that said, the reason the 2015 final rule says to code the etiologic with a seventh character of A is because those seventh characters of D for continuing treatment or subsequent treatment do not cause the case to meet a compliance rule of 60%, and that means 60% of their patients have to fit into 13 different categories, and so there's multiple diagnoses they have to fit in, or one of those diagnoses they have to fit in. So CMS came up and said, wait a minute, we need to make sure this EDO is going to meet when we want it to meet, and so they gave us direction to use for the EDO the A when it is continuing treatment for a new acute issue, I would say. Okay, now, let's, that said, for conditions reported as comorbidities on the ERF pie that require a seventh character, the seventh character, Barbara, is typically D, subsequent care, unless the injury or condition happened while the patient was in ERF. So that is the delineating factor here. Did the patient come in with it? That means it would be the comorbidity would be listed with the seventh character D, or did it happen, get diagnosed while they were in ERF? Seventh character would be A, okay? So let's talk about it, because what I wanted to refer you to is Coding Clinic first quarter 2015, page 3, okay? That's first quarter 2015, page 3. Now, it says the question for that was the patient who is status post-treatment of multiple fractures currently in the healing phase is transferred to a rehabilitation facility. At the rehab facility, the patient is covered by a new physician that has never seen the patient before. Should the seventh character for fractures be reported as an A, initial encounter, because it's a new physician, even though the patient is considered to be in the healing phase? And then their answer was, the key to selecting the seventh character for initial encounter is whether there is still active treatment. And it goes on to give examples of active treatment. The fact that the patient is seeing a new physician does not have any relevance in determining the seventh character. And here's the moneymaker, okay? Here's the sentence that I want you to hear. Rehabilitation services are not considered active treatment, and the encounter should be reported with the appropriate seventh character for subsequent encounter. So the rule for etiologic is different because CMS saying it is due to the 60% rule in the 2015 final rule, and it's for ERF only, okay? But the codes that are listed as comorbidities follow the coding clinic guidance as listed there, since there is no other rule that supersedes that or trumps that in CMS causing it to change. Okay, there's a few rules that CMS has out there related to reporting comorbidities in the IRF setting. You know, and one of those is like reporting gangrene and it's like, so if you have questions about that one, I can tell you later. But in this particular instance, that is why we are reporting the seventh character of D and when we choose to report it on a patient with a comorbidity on the IRF PI. Now, you realize on the UB, all of those codes are probably going to be a seventh character of D because you've got them in a rehab setting. But anyway. There you go. So, Barbara, thanks for your question. And I made that a really long-winded question. So, Pam, we can move on to the next one.
Okay. Thank you, Paula. Well, it's very, very helpful to the way that you outlined it there because I have heard that question asked a lot of different ways and have been confused because the answers didn't seem to line up. And so you had just explained it. Yay. Thank you.
Awesome.
Now, our next question, this one's also from an inpatient rehab. I should have read the whole list. This is from our friend Jody. Hi, Jody. We're glad you're here. And the question is, an inpatient rehab doctor diagnosed thalamic stroke with bilateral lower extremity weakness. I need the acute codes for the legs in IRF-PI and CVA sequel code for the legs on the UB. I considered monoplegia, but right monoplegia and left monoplegia didn't sound right. My super smart coworker suggested I-69-365, other paralytic syndrome, following cerebral infarction bilateral. But the acute code would be paraplegia. The doctor didn't say that. I'm sending him a query to see if he'll clarify, but he's leaving on vacation. He may not answer for 10 days. In the meantime, I want to ask what you say. Am I on the right track with other paralytic syndrome and paraplegia, providing he states paraplegia complete or incomplete based on the query? Was I on the right track with two monoplegia codes, or should I just be using other sequela and weakness?
Okay, awesome. So let's talk about the options here, Jody. We've got I-69-341 is the code for monoplegia due to intracerebral CVA dominant right lower side, and I-69-344 is monoplegia of the left dominant side. Now, the reason we chose these options, and I'm not telling you I'm choosing the code right now. I'm just telling you what the options were that because Jody didn't give us all the codes in her question, so I'm sharing with you why I chose those. The reason we chose those is that because the dominant side was not stated, and we have a coding rule that directs us to report the right dominant if the dominant side is not documented and the left non-dominant. So reporting both of these codes would describe the situation if they, you know, if they were both reported, but it's best description, is it, I should say, the best description for the principal diagnosis. Our other option is I-69-365, other paralytic syndrome following cerebral infarction, and there is an instruction following this code to use additional code to identify the paralytic syndrome, such as G83.5 locked in state or G82.5 quadriplegia. This instruction says such as, so the code options given are not a complete list. This means that when you report I-69-365, you will also report a second code describing the paralytic syndrome itself. However, here's a caveat here, there is also an excludes one note following I-69-365, which says that you would not report I-69-34 series of codes with I-69-365. So it would seem like it would make sense to me to go I-69-365 and then the I-69-34 codes to show that it was monoplegia of both legs because it's, you know, that's just how we think, right? However, because of the excludes one note, it says that is not appropriate. The guideline tells us that excludes one's codes can only be reported if they are not related to each other. In this case, they are, so they would not be reported together. Now, that led us to research what code would be used to further describe the bilateral lower extremity paresis. And as you're aware, there is no code for bilateral lower extremity paresis. So the best fit would be G 83.89 for the other specified paralytic syndrome. Now, while reporting the monoplegia of both legs appears correct, our choice is to report the other paralytic syndrome, I-69-365 and the G83.89. Even though the codes are less specific, the I-69.365 tells the whole picture for both extremities rather than the monoplegia where you get for just one side of the body, if you will, one leg reported as the principal. So that's a long description, and I didn't read the full question to start with. So let me say for the IRF-PI, you would use the acute code, as we're calling it, would be the G83.89, and for the UB, the I69365 and the G83.89.
Thank you. Thank you. Do I have time to squeeze in one more?
Yeah, I think this next one's really short. We'll get something in besides inpatient rehab. So,
okay. Yeah, this is outpatient physical therapy. So it's from Anonymous, and Anonymous says, our therapist commonly provides 8 minutes of therapy for many of the time's modalities. Is it appropriate to report two services if each of them is provided for 8 minutes?
So, okay, so yeah, let's look at an example here. Let's say the patient had 8 minutes of therapeutic exercises, which you would report with 97110 CPT, and 8 minutes of eSIM, 97032. In this case, the total time with the patient was only 16 minutes, right? Now, CMS gives us a direction that says timed codes must be performed a minimum of 8 minutes in order to bill one unit. That said, if the therapist only performed 16 minutes of total time, it would not be appropriate to report both services. So you're only going to report one of them in this instance. And a lot of times, you know, your charge capture process in hospitals on the outpatient side cause a problem with this. So likely you're going to choose to report the one with the highest payment rate. But you would only report one because you didn't the services wasn't provided for at least 23 minutes. So it will be 8 minutes into the second 15 minutes in order to report two units. So there you have it. And hey, thank you guys. And I just want to say something real quick before Pam does the mugging. It is very, very likely that the library of previous Coffee with the Coders, 90-something episodes now, will be going away to just everyone. It will still be available to certain groups of people, Revenue Warriors and AQIQ subscribers. So hey, listen out for when we're going to open the next Revenue Warriors group. We'd really love to have you be a part of it or become a subscriber to AQIQ. And Pam, I'm going to turn it back over to you and let you do a mugging.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, we had two non-anonymous questions, and one of these people is going to get a mug today. I've got their names on folded slips of paper, so I don't know who it is. I've been stirring them up. I'm going to open one and see who we get. Today's winner is Barbara. Well, thank you, Barbara, for the question, and I will reach out to you and find out where to mail your mug. Have a beautiful day. We look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks. It will be August the 10th. Wow, where did the year go, right? And for the episode 96.